Hi, I'm Asha Tomlinson.
And I'm David Common.
And we're hosts of CBC Marketplace. We're award-winning investigative journalists that want to help you avoid clever scams, unsafe products, and sketchy services.
Our TV show has been Canada's top investigative consumer watchdog for more than 50 years, but this is our first podcast.
CBC Marketplace podcast is available now on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast. Should we rethink our relationship with technology in the midst of the AI revolution? Sleepwalkers, a podcast from iHeartRadio, explores the strange consequence of human interaction with artificial intelligence. With secret labs and expert guests, co-hosts Oz Wallachin and Kara Price talk about how new technology is changing everything, from falling in love to diagnosing cancer. Listen to Sleepwalkers on your favorite podcast app or wherever you get Front Burner.
Hey, I'm Jamie Poisson.
We woke up to a loud bang, and one of the housemates, Diane, went to open the door, and to about 10 M4s in her face and an FBI raid team, and they were cuffing her.
On Monday, a woman was arrested in Seattle for allegedly pulling off one of the biggest financial hacks in history. We're talking SIN numbers, bank account numbers, addresses, credit card charges from the bank Capital One. 100 million Americans were affected, 6 million Canadians. It is wild. Greg Otto reports on hacking and cybersecurity as editor-in-chief of CyberScoop. He's here with me now from Washington to explain how on earth the hacker did this, why she got caught, and what do you do when your most sensitive information gets targeted? That's today on Front Burner. Greg, hello. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So can we start with Paige Thompson, the person who's allegedly at the center of this? What do we know about her so far?
So Paige Thompson is a 33-year-old software engineer that has seemingly bounced around from job to job. Interestingly enough, she actually spent time working for Amazon as a systems engineer on their cloud computing platform. She has lived in Washington for some time, and recently it has been brought to light she is a transgender woman that had spent a lot of time online talking about that, as well as a lot of time talking about a lot of nerdy technical things when it comes to cloud computing, network computing, cybersecurity, hacking, all different types of technological know-how. And it's clear from looking at some of her other social media profiles, it seems like she was a pretty astute engineer and a pretty astute on how to poke around and get inside and outside all of these cloud instances that she had worked with before.
Thompson's roommates want to protect their identities. They said she'd been unemployed since leaving Amazon and spent most of her time at home on the computer.
She told me she worked at Amazon, and she, when she was working on the servers there, that she did some breach hacking there just to see if there were gaps that she could fill, but that was it.
Let's talk about what she's accused of doing.
Sure. What she's accused of doing from a legal perspective, she has been charged with one count of computer fraud and abuse, and that's under the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, which is a really fundamental law when it comes to what goes on in the cybersecurity space in America. But she's charged with taking all of this information from Capital One, and that has run afoul of this law. So the way that this was discovered is that she had been pretty brazen with how she talked about what she did in terms of taking that information.
Thompson, who reportedly goes by the online handle Erratic, boasted about the hack, posting, "I've basically strapped myself with a bomb vest," dropping Capital One's docs and admitting it.
The reason this came to Capital One's attention was that somebody else had saw on her GitHub page mm-hmm. that there was a bunch of information that looked like sensitive Capital One information, and that person turned around and emailed a link to Capital One through a vulnerability disclosure email and said, hey guys, you might want to look at this. This looks like your sensitive information is just out in the public in GitHub, and you probably don't want that to happen. So check that out. And it turned out it was, and everybody moved from there.
And this is months after she does the initial hack, right?
Yes. This was all of 2 weeks ago. I believe the date was July 17th that Capital One got that email to say, you better take a look at this. I think somebody took all of this information from your system.
So you mentioned Amazon and GitHub, but let's really get into how she was able to do this.
So what she did, according to the FBI complaint, she managed to get around a firewall that Capital One had set up. It looks like Capital One had some misconfigurations in the firewall, and there was a big hole in the fence, basically, but it wasn't due to negligence necessarily. It seems like, you know, building these digital fences are hard. It is very, very hard. And she was able to pull all of this information out of Capital One's systems. I mean, beyond the SIN numbers, we're talking about Social Security numbers, and we're talking about just a ton of personally identifiable information, PII for short. We're talking names, addresses, date of birth, credit score, credit history, even I think there were some bank account numbers and some actual information that had to do with some transactions
wow.
that had occurred as well. So we're talking just a ton of sensitive information here.
It's wild.
Yeah. She pulled all of this information out in March, and then she proceeded to brag about it a little bit. She was in some Slack channels that some information security people were in, and also she dumped a bunch of stuff on GitHub as well. And she even used GitHub's like note feature. GitHub has this feature where you can share just little text snippets. And she put some information on there that looked to be information that she took from Capital One.
So here's a screenshot. It reads in part, "I want to get it off my server. That's why I'm archiving all of it. We've blurred out the curse words."
And like, is GitHub sort of like Dropbox, but for people who are better at technology?
Well,
fair?
I would say that GitHub is really big within the coding and the programming community because it's a platform that allows the sharing of code.
So it's not really like Dropbox at all. It's just, can you tell I've never been on GitHub? Okay. So we've got this hacker, this alleged hacker, Paige Thompson. She is able to essentially manipulate or exploit this loophole in the firewall around Capital One. You mentioned she used to work for Amazon. This may have given her some expertise, although she already has a ton of expertise in this. She's able to extract this extraordinary amount of data, a huge, huge trove of data. And then she essentially sits on the data, releasing some of it on her GitHub page, but also just brags about the fact that she did this. Did she ever talk about why she did this, right? Like, what was the motivation behind it? Because, you know, you would think that maybe one would want to sell this to some criminal enterprise, right?
Right.
SIN numbers and bank account numbers are like the perfect recipe to steal somebody's identity.
Right. And that is really what we are trying to figure out collectively, like journalists, law enforcement, what really was the motive behind this? Because, look, it's very clear that she was very technically adept when it comes to getting that information out. Like, she has some tweets where she explains, you know, if I wanted to do this, here's how I would do this. And they are extremely, extremely technical. They show how, you know, she can manipulate an identity and access management system. And that takes a certain skill level. Like, this isn't just a simple basic computer user that just happened to fall into the wrong file. Like, there was skill there. But, you know, it goes back to the sort of brazen, okay, I'm going to put information out there that I did this on my GitHub page. That doesn't line up with the technical capabilities there, because anybody that has the technical capabilities to do this also knows better, like knows how to cover their tracks, knows how to practice what is known as operational security or OPSEC.
Would I be going too far if I said maybe it looked like a cry for help?
No, I don't think so. I mean, look, I don't personally know Paige at all, but from conversations that I've been having with people that knew her, it seems like there were some mental health issues there. So there seems to be a little bit of a nihilistic streak there where it's just saying, you know, screw this. I'm just going to do this because I'm capable of doing this. And I really don't know why I would do this other than just to say, you know, I'm just going to burn it all to the ground.
A housemate offered this possible motive.
More or less from what we understand is she did it just because she could.
Paige just wanted to see if she could. She had no nefarious intentions with the data.
There's this one quote that struck me. She wrote, "I have a whole list of things that will ensure my involuntary confinement from the world."
Yeah. She knew what she was doing.
Right.
Or she knew the gravity of what taking this data was going to amount to.
I also just want to point out, of course, she's been charged with these crimes, but has not been convicted in court.
Yes, absolutely.
So I'm listening to you talk about this, and, you know, the obvious question that I have is that, you know, I understand this hack of Capital One happened a few months ago, and they only recently found out about it. So how on earth is that possible, that someone is able to obtain this kind of information from a bank, a very powerful, influential, rich bank, and nobody knows about it?
It really goes to show how hard it is when you are an extremely large organization and you want to embrace modern technology, how hard it is to get everything right. Capital One is known as being one of the more technology-focused companies and technology-focused banks in the U.S. And
this makes me feel even worse, right?
Right.
Yeah.
They have a pretty good track record of knowing how to use cloud computing and knowing how to use all the different technologies that are, you know, coming into our lifestyles. And they do a really, really good job of it. They have a really good reputation. So when you see stories like this, the one question that comes to mind that Capital One hasn't answered yet is, how did they not know that a transfer of that amount of data had left their systems? That is a really big question. But we talked about that email where Capital One was made aware that this was even happening. That was 2 weeks ago. So from 2 weeks ago to getting to the point where somebody is in custody and we've made an announcement to the world that this has taken place, in security terms, that is light speed.
Huh.
Like that, I think if you look at some of the other breaches that have made national and international headlines, and you really dig into the timeline, you're talking at most like a 6-month window where attackers have had the chance to poke around inside systems, pull what they want to pull, and the company recognizes it.
And this is one of the largest data breaches in history. It happened at Equifax.
Nearly 143 million accounts were compromised in the U.S. starting in late May. It took the company until July to discover the hack and another month to inform the public.
So for Capital One to have all of this occur in the span of 2 weeks really shows just the largesse of these companies. More and more as they get into this technology, this stuff is really, really hard to pin down.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's really, really hard to put everything in a safe and just say you are going to be 100% secure all of the time. That's just not the way that this works when it comes to technology.
Yahoo's had an information breach that's affected almost a half billion accounts.
There is growing demand for the federal government to take action over the privacy breach at Desjardins Group.
BMO here and CIBC Simply Financial received tips over the weekend that they had been hacked.
Is it fair, though, for me to say that perhaps one of the reasons why they were able to move at such light speed is because she has allegedly left all of these breadcrumbs? Like, is because she posted this data on her own GitHub page?
Yes, that absolutely helped. The fact that investigators did not have to look very far to figure out what exactly it was that happened here.
Mm-hmm.
The GitHub, where this information was first posted, was under her full name. So her account name was her full name. So all law enforcement had to do was pretty much, you know, run some other investigations to see where these account names also were pervasive on the internet, and then poked around onto who owned those accounts, and then we move into, you know, the arrest phase.
Right.
So it was not a very hard investigation from a law enforcement standpoint.
You mentioned other hacks. Can you put this hack into context for me? So when I think of these massive hacks that we've heard about recently, I think of the Sony hack, obviously. All of these embarrassing emails got released.
Even making racial remarks about President Obama. Sony employees bashing Adam Sandler's movies.
The hackers, who call themselves Guardians of Peace, say they want to block the release of an upcoming movie, believed to be The Interview, a comedy about the assassination of North Korea's president.
I think of the Ashley Madison hack,
right,
where a lot of people who were using this site service to cheat on their spouses were very embarrassed after their data got released.
Long spreadsheets of partial credit card information, but more revealing, the corresponding names and home addresses of Ashley Madison users.
And I think of the Equifax data breach, which feels like maybe the most similar because SIN numbers, birth dates, addresses were also hacked.
Right. And I'm glad that you brought this up because this is something more and more has the story has unfolded that it's important to point out. I think that this hack is really unique in that, look, we can talk about the numbers that are associated here, and those numbers are big. The 140,000 Social Security numbers, 100 million U.S. residents, 6 million Canadian residents. But it's not like Equifax 2.0. And here's the reason why is a lot of what we've seen with, like, the Sony hacks or Target, Home Depot, Equifax, they are one of two things. They are either nation-state hacks where it's a wing of a country doing intelligence or doing espionage, and they're taking that information for those purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Or you look at it from a criminal perspective where it was criminals hacking into a company to take information, and they're going to sell that on the dark web to other criminals that are in turn going to use it for identity theft, and it's just a for-profit type thing.
Mm-hmm.
This hack is different for a couple reasons, and one is that clearly Paige Thompson, as the information that we have right now, wasn't doing this to sell it to those criminal forums. So there wasn't any exchange of money. So there wasn't any for profit there. And there doesn't seem to be any evidence that this information has been disseminated either to criminal forums or to any other nation state actors or anything like that. This was one person who hacked the information, and that information sat on all of the hardware that that person possessed.
Okay, so for the 6 million Canadians right now, basically the message to them is that you don't need to be too worried about this particular hack, whereas in contrast, the Equifax hack was far more worrisome.
Absolutely, because that nobody knows who is responsible for the Equifax hacks.
Mm-hmm.
Still to this day. I mean, even as they start to cut checks in the U.S. for the class action lawsuit.
This settlement includes at least $575 million and up to $700 million in monetary relief, as well as important conduct provisions.
Nobody knows, one, where that information went or who was responsible for it. This, to use a metaphor, is like if in the real world, if Paige Thompson rolled up to Capital One's biggest safe possible, took a bunch of money and then stuffed it into a van and the paint traps went off in that van and the cops found that paint van. That's it. We have the culprit. We have the information that the act of stealing occurred, but this could have been much, much worse.
Although so far as we can tell, because, you know, there at least is some data that was sitting on her GitHub page, right? And we can't really prove who accessed that.
Right. Yes.
Thank you.
curious to hear your thoughts on how you think the American justice system is going to react here. So how seriously do you think these cases are going to be handled? Do you think that they'll try and make an example out of Paige Thompson?
God, that's a good question. I'm not sure. You know, they haven't handled it well. It goes back to this Computer Fraud and Abuse Act law that we were talking about earlier. These cases range all over the place. The CFAA is known as a very, very esoteric law. It was written in 1986. Mm. I mean, think about all of the technological innovations that we've seen since 1986.
We didn't even have cell phones in 1986.
Yeah, right.
Did
exactly.
We?
Yeah. I think they were just coming online. Yeah. But I mean, yeah, think about all those technological innovations and the way that all of this stuff is built and maintained, and we're still sort of protecting it under this law that was written in the 80s. But, you know, you get back to Paige Thompson. I mean, this was somebody who, I mean, I believe that she called the Capital One information a bomb strapped to her vest. So she knew the ramifications of what she took. And when, you know, you talk about intent and motive, yeah, the justice system does not like it when somebody does something premeditated. So I would not be surprised if she was made an example of. But again, the CFAA, there's just so much there that could be debated. I can't say definitively how this is all going to shake out in court.
Greg, thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So just a note to say that the bail hearing for Paige Thompson is set for tomorrow, Thursday. And when we recorded this episode, her lawyer, a federal public defender, had yet to comment on the case. Also, you might want to check out this website that a bunch of us have been messing around with. It's pretty revealing. It's haveibeenpwned.com. Pwned is spelled P-W-N-E-D. Apparently, it's this word that people use a lot when they're playing World of Warcraft. I don't know. But anyways, you can plug in your email address and it will tell you if your personal data has been compromised. That's it for today. I'm Jamie Poisson. Thanks so much for listening to Front Burner.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.